Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra, Daf Kuf Mem. We will begin on Daf Kuf Lametes at the Gemara right after the Mishnah. We'll quickly learn over the Mishnah, relearn the Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, Bishmeis v'inich banim banos, the son who passes away and he leaves over children, girls and boys, if the assets are abundant. We'll see what merubim means soon in the Gemara. Habanim yirshuv, habanas yizoynu. The banas we're talking about girls, that the father has to support his daughters, as it says in the Ksuba. However, if nechasim muatim, habanas yizoynu, habanim yishalu al psachim. And comments Adman, b'shul shanizach, because I'm a male, hifsadati, do I lose out? Amar Gamliel. And Gamil comments, Royan is the Re'adim. So our Mishnah is teaching us that there's a fundamental difference in halacha between when the father leaves Nechasim Merubim versus when the father leaves Nechasim Mu'atim. And the Gemara Mitzvashem will explain and identify what Nechasim Merubim, how do we come to that number of Nechasim Merubim versus what is considered Nechasim Mu'atim. Interesting question that the Rishonim discuss is that we just mentioned the other day that even though Mi'ikra Hadin, from what we learned in the Gemara and the Mishnah, the only assets that are Meshubit to support the daughters are Karka, not Metaltlin. But as we said, there's a Takonis HaGa'oinim, that even Metaltlin should be mortgaged and the daughters have a lien to get supported from a taltlin that the father leaves over. And the question that comes up is, in order to make the calculation, is it nechasim merubim or is it nechasim utan, do we take the mataltlin into consideration? And the Chalkas Mechaikik, the Beis Shmuel discussed this, and they say that the halacha is that the mataltlin are taken into consideration. And even if we were only to look at the karka, the halacha would, the situation would be where the girls have nechasim u'atim. The metatlin are taken into consideration, and it's considered a situation of nechasim merubim if the metatlin bring you up to that number. And the question is very obvious. Why can't the girls claim that when Chazal, when the goyim made this takana, that even metatlin are mortgaged to take care of their support, that takana was only made for our benefit. Here, it turns out to be to our detriment, because it is obvious, the girls would prefer in the custom mu'atim that they should be have a much stronger hold, we'll discuss this more in a moment, versus it should be in the custom merubin. So why can't the girls claim that we don't want it to be, we don't want the metatlin to be mortgaged where it turns out to be to our detriment. Says the Beis Shmuel. The way do we say this concept that indeed, says the Beis Shmuel, when Chazal, when the Goyim instituted l'chatchila, that nechosim, that metatlin are also mortgaged to the support of the girls, it was done for the benefit of the girls, not for the benefit of the boys. However, says the Beis Shmuel, once this takana is in place, we can't start picking and choosing. And takana is a takana that's not only for the benefit of the girls, but also for the benefit of the boys. In other words, it could well be that if the only ones to benefit from such a takana would have been the sons, the goyim would have never made such a takana. But once the takana is in place, we have to look at the whole picture. And we have to say that the takana is there for the benefit of the sons and for the daughters, and therefore the daughters can't say that we're going to pick and choose and rely on the takana only when it's good for us, not when it's not good for us. So as we just learned in the Mishnah, there's a difference between the nechasim merubim and the nechasim mu'atim. Ask them, v'kamim merubim, what is the definition of the nechasim merubim? Amar Rav Yehuda Merav, k'dei shizoynu mehen elu v'elu shnei masach chodesh. If there's enough that the sons and the daughters have what to live off for 12 months, that's considered Nechasim Merubim. Where do we get the number of 12 months? So I saw Machlokes Rishonim. Some Rishonim explain, because there's always the possibility that the girl will get married. And once the girls get married, there's obviously no obligation for the father's estate to support them. So after 12 months, we have to be concerned they're not going to be married. After 12 months, they'll maybe be married, and therefore we don't have to be concerned about that. Other Rishonim say, there actually is a precedent for this number of 12 months. Because the halacha is, we've discussed this, we will discuss this, that a ksuba, that the ksuba says that the almana is supported from the estate. And the Gemara Masechta Ksubas discusses what is the din where there's no metatlin, or metatlin, as we just said, really aren't obligated to pay for the woman's support. There's property. And they want, so they need to sell property to support the woman. So how much property do you have to sell? How much real estate? So the Gemara says you sell a year's support at a time. That much real estate is sold. So you see that there's a concept of a year at a time. And as Rav Shmuel Rizovsky explains this opinion of the Gemara, he says that truthfully, all the money should go to the sons as a Yerusha. That's the Din Torah. There's a special Takanas Chazal that we're discussing that give the daughters support. But we can't overdo it. And therefore we only look at a year. That's this opinion. Kamrisa Kamei de Shmuel, when I repeated this opinion to Shmuel, says, Rabbi Yehuda, Omar, he said to me, Zud de Rabbi Gamliel. This is Rabbi Gamliel's opinion. Zud de Gamliel, Rabbi Rabbi. Avicham Moimim, Kadeshi Zoinim Eilu Ve'elu Achi Yivagru. That the way to count is not for 12 months. We look at the age of the girls, and we look how much will it be till they're boigris, because we shouldn't assume that they're going to be married before they're boigrisin. And therefore, we have to count how old are the daughters, how many daughters there are, how old are they now, and how many years are there till they get, till they become begaris, that's probably when they'll get married. And that's the number that we consider, that we have to consider to make the difference of the Chasim Rubim on the Chasim Uatim. Rishonim point out, here the Gemara says that it was Rav Gamliel that says that the shear was 12 months. Ask the Rishonim, we just relearned the Mishnah, where in the Mishnah, Rav Gamliel says that he actually concurs with the opinion of Admon, that doesn't have this distinction between the Chasim Rubim and the Chasim Atim. So how can we say that this represents the opinion of Rav Gamliel? So I saw three pshatim, the Ritva gives. One pshat is, simple pshat, Rav Gamliel is explaining the opinion of the Chachamim, even though he doesn't personally agree with the Chachamim. Another pshat is there were two Rav Gamliels. There's Rav Gamliel HaZaken, and there's Rav Gamliel who was the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. The Mishnah is reflecting the opinion of Rav Gamliel HaNasi. The Gemara is reflecting the opinion of Rav Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rav Gamliel HaZaken is the Mishnah. A third pshat, interesting pshat that the Rishonim suggests, is yes, Rav Gamliel concurs with the opinion of Admon that has trouble treating the boys less than the girls. And we'll explain Admon's opinion later in our Shir Mitzvah. But that doesn't mean that Rav Gamliel, Admon, completely discount the opinion of Chachamim that there's a reason to be concerned about the support of the girls. And in other words, what they're saying is, the machloikis in our Gemara, do we look 12 months, or do we look at Shiyavagru, is actually the machloikis of the Chachamim and Admon in our Mishnah. Where Admon and our Mishnah will only say we look up to 12 months, and the Chachamim in our Mishnah will say Shiyavagru. So in other words, now it's much better. Because actually Rav Gamliel in the Mishnah, and Rav Gamliel in the Gemara, is exactly the same Rav Gamliel. Ask the Yad Ramah. We know that how does a woman's cycle, life cycle go? First, she's a ketana. When she's 12 years old and she brings shtei simonim, she's a nara. 6 months later, she becomes a bageris. But she's not a nara and eventually a bageris unless she brings the shtei saris. So how can we know exactly when she's going to be a nara and be a bageris if it depends on the shtei simonim? It isn't only dependent on our age. So how can we ever make a clear calculation, as the Yad Ramah, to when she'll be a Begeris, to know what's Nechasim Rubim, Nechasim Artem? Says the Yad Ramah, since most girls do become Naros at the age of 12, because most girls do bring Shtei Saris at that age, and therefore they become Begeris at 12 and a half, when we make this calculation, we could follow the way it is with most people in the world. It Menami, continues the Gemara, Kios Rav and Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Vamalei Amar Rabba Bar Rabba Kana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Shizoyna Me'elu Ve'elu Ad Shiv Ragru, if there's enough to support them until they become Baigris, Heim Rubim, it's considered Nechasim Rubim, Pachs Mikan, but if there isn't enough, Hare Elu Me'atim, it's considered Nechasim Atim. Ask the Gemara, Vileka Le'elu Le'elu Ad Shiv Ragru, Shok Le'banis L'kula, what does our Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that what's the difference between the Chasim Rubim and the Chasim Atim? That by the Chasim Atim, the girls get support and let the boys go take tzedakah. And the Chasim Rubim, there's no need to do that. Ask the Gemara, what's our Gemara? What did the Gemara just say, the Itman Nami? That how do we make the calculation that if the girls have enough, the girls and the boys have enough till she evagru, that's considered the Chasim Rubim. Ask the Gemara, why are we looking at what the boys get? What the Gemara should be saying is as follows, that if the girls have, let's say the father left $100,000, and we make a calculation that it takes $60,000 to support them until they become bigris. So the other $40,000 don't go to the girls, they go to the boys. So what's the Gemara saying that is taken into consideration? El Amarov, this is the way to understand it. Achivagru v'shalabonim. What the Gemara means to say, says Rav is as follows. Exactly what I said. The father left $100,000. $60,000 is what the girls need. That $60,000 is taken off. Now, and that's all we have to look at. Is there nechasim rubim? Is there enough? Is there not enough? If there's going to be more, so then the boys take the extra, and they use it for themselves. And if that will support them, fine. If it won't support them, when they use up that excess money, that's when they're going to have to be chayzer al-psach. But we have now a very fundamental question to discuss before we go further into the Gemara. Our Mishnah, as I just explained, the Mishnah, the Gemara, draws a distinction between the Chasim Rubim and the Chasim Atim. That by the Chasim Atim, the girls get supported, and by the Chasim Rubim, they also get supported. So where is there a difference, practically, between the Chasim Rubim and the Chasim Atim? We're always going to calculate what they need for support, and that has to be put aside for them. So where's the practical nafkamina? So many Rishonim, it's not actually the opinion of the Rashbam, but many Rishonim, and that's the easiest way to understand the Gemara, and that's the pshat that we're going to work with in our Gemara, say this, the difference is as follows. If there's only nechasim mu'atim, then the assets are not given to the son. The estate is not given to the son. They're given to the girls. There's two opinions. What does it mean, given to the girls? Some it's actually given to the girls. Some say it's given to Bezdin to administer on behalf of the girls. Whereas if Baruch Hashem there's nechasim rubim, then the sons retain control of the estate. The sons retain control of the estate, and they support the girls. That's the difference between the Chasim Rubim and the Chasim Atim. The Rashbam, as I said, doesn't agree with that pshat, and he said the nafkamina between the Chasim Rubim and the Chasim Atim is only as far as if there are fluctuations in the value of the estate, who does it affect, the sons or the daughters? But again, as I said, we're going to learn the Gemara like the other Rishonim. And therefore says the Gemara, Pshita, it's obvious, Merubim v'nismatu, if this was an estate that was evaluated, assessed, to be an estate of Nechas Merubim, v'nismatu, and then they go down, then the value of this estate goes down, Kfazoch ben Yarshim. And again, to follow our Pshat, what the Gemara is saying is like this, once we identified that this is an estate of Nechasim Merubim, and therefore, as I said, the sons get control of the estate, even if the value goes down, and now it would be considered an estate of Nechasim Mu'atim, we don't take it away from them. But what would be in the Atev and Nisrabu, just the opposite? It was an estate that started off to be considered Nuchas Mo'atim, and now the Nisrabu situation changes. And we need to understand what does it mean that the situation changed. All Rishonim agree that if the price of food goes down, and therefore when we made our original evaluation, we thought that we're going to need this much money to feed these daughters, and because we need that much to feed the daughters, it's Nechas Mo'atim. But now the price of food drops. And because the price of food drops, we don't need so much. That's the Gemara's question, for sure. But there is a debate amongst the Rishonim. Why would be the halacha, not in the situation where the price of food drops, which we know doesn't happen very often, but rather the value of the assets go up. The father left over real estate, the father left over different assets. And the price, the market value of these items went up. So many Rishonim say that's also the case that the Gemara is referring to. Others say that if it's a situation, the Aflo discusses this, if it's a situation where the value of the real estate went up, that's not called Menatav Nisrabu. Because once it was put into the son's control, and the price of these assets fluctuate, that doesn't change the original valuation. So Menatav Nisrabu Mai. Do we say, Rishus Yorshin Kaimi, since, as I said before, once it was identified as Nechas Merubim, everything is put under the control of the sons, so it remains there, and we say, Hilcha Rishus Yorshin Shavach, nothing changes. Oidema, Sluki Mesal Kinim Yorshin Mehachab. If now the situation changed, and now it was changed, does it change where they should be? Tashma, Dam Rav Yosi, Am Rav Yochanan. Yisayim shkadmu mochav b'nechasim. If Yisayim went and sold nechasim mo'atim, which they shouldn't have, because as we explained, nechasim mo'atim don't go to the Yisayim. The halach is mashem mochav mochav. And the machlokes Rashbam and Tosfos how to understand this Gemara. Rashbam explains the Gemara in the following manner. Rashbam says that as we learned in the Mishnah and the Gemara, when the father dies and he left children, we need to make an evaluation. He left young girls. We need to make an evaluation. Is this Nechas Merubim? Is this Nechas Mu'atim? Let's say before Beis Din made that assessment, the sons went and sold. So they did the wrong thing, because they're supposed to wait for Beis Din to make that assessment. The halach is what they did, what they sold is considered a valid sale. Why? Obviously, since the sons are the Yorshim, it gives them a very strong handle here. And therefore, now Gemara 2, if once it was identified to be by the assignment, we always give it to the assignment, we always give it to the sons, because the sons really deserve it, because with the right, so they have a right to sell. They have the right because they're Yorshim. But, according to the Rashbam, this thing that if there was Nechasim Mu'atim and the sons shouldn't have sold and they sold, it's a valid sale, is only if that happened before the assessment. But if after the assessment was done and this estate was identified to be Nechasim Mu'atim and then the sons sell, the Rashbam says that the Gemara doesn't hold would be acceptable. It was already identified to be in the control of the daughters, the sons have no right to sell. That's how the Rashbam explains the Gemara. Tosfos learns the Gemara even in a bigger chiddush. Tosfos says that not only in a situation where they sold before it was identified to be Nechas Mo'atim is the sale considered valid, but even in a situation where they sold after it was identified to be Nechas Mo'atim, and as I said earlier, therefore under the control of the daughters, but the evidence of the sons went and sold, it's acceptable. It's really very hard to understand Pshat and Tosfos. It's already been identified as Nechas Mo'atim, that we're learning is under the control of the daughters. So why would the Gemara say, according to Tosfos' understanding, that the sons who did the wrong thing, even at that point, b'di'ebed, it's a valid sale. So I saw a number of explanations. Two from the Rishonim, one from the Achronim. From the Rishonim I saw, going back to a vart I said earlier in the shir, we can't forget the din of Yerusha Daraisa. And since Yerusha Daraisa says that all of this estate belongs to the sons, so yes, the Rabbanim made special takanas, but they can't completely uproot what it says in the Torah, that these assets belong to the sons. And therefore, since with the Raisa, because of Hilchos Yerusha, these assets belong to the son, they shouldn't have sold it. If they sold it, it's valid. Other Rishonim explain, also a vart that we said earlier, there's always a chance that the daughters will get married at any time. And once those daughters get married, their rights go away. So since the daughter's rights to these assets is tenuous at best, because they could get married and then their rights are no longer here, therefore the sons still remain active balabatim on these assets, and therefore, Masha, if they sold it, it's valid. Those are the pshatim that I saw in the Rishonim. Rabbi Chanan says a different pshat. Rabbi Chanan says pshat like this. He says, truthfully, the chiyuv mezainus that the daughters get, it's not a yearly chiyuv, or a weekly, or monthly or weekly chiyuv. It's a daily chiyuv. It's every day is a separate obligation. Just of course, we're not going to go to Beis Din every day to determine is it Nechasim Rubim, Nechasim Latim, what is it going to be? The Yashon will spend their lives in Beis Din. So we make it a year till by Geras, whatever pshat we started this year with. But the obligation is a daily obligation. And that obligation, once the girls got their mezoinus for today, so we've satisfied the requirement that Chazal has put on this estate, that the daughter should get supported. And therefore, once that daily assessment, daily allotment has been given to the girls, the sons are in control, and therefore, b'dieved, what they sold is valid. Says the Gemara, Yosser of Yimei Kamei Rav Avuva Kaboy Minei. He asked him the following question. The case of our Mishnah, but besides the sons and the daughters, there's also an almana. What does she do to this estate? So the Rishonim, firstly, when they wanted to speak about almana, what do we mean? Because the truth of the matter is, there's two obligations to the almana. One obligation to the almana is that she has to get her ksuba payment. The other obligation to the almana is that until she requests that ksuba payment, the estate has to support her. So the Rishonim debate, when our Gemara is asking, Almanosoi, Ma'ahu, Shetamat, how do we look at the Almana? What part of the Almana obligation are we talking about? Some Rishonim say we're speaking about the Ksuba obligation. And the question of the Gemara is, when making the assessment, if this is Nechasim Merubim or Nechasim Atim, do we take the Ksuba obligation into consideration? Other Rishonim say that absolutely the ksuba obligation is for sure there. It's a very firm obligation. And that the Gemara is not discussing. And that number is taken off the top immediately. The Gemara's question now is, as I said a moment ago, that besides the chiv of paying her the ksuba, there's a chiv of supporting her. The Gemara's question is that number taken into the consideration in determining if we have Nechasim Merubim or Nechasim Atim. A third shot that I saw in the Rishonim is just the opposite. The Ksuba obligation is certainly not taken into consideration because we don't know when she'll ever ask for it, because she only will ask for the Ksuba to be paid to when she wants to get remarried. She may never want to get remarried. So the Ksuba obligation is not what we discuss. We're only discussing this Mezoinus, and the question again is really, the Gemara's question is that number, the number that we think we're going to have to spend on supporting the Almana, taken into consideration when determining we have Nechasim Rubim, Nechasim Atim. Amanasai Masha Tamayat Menechasim. Me and Rina, Kim Disla Mezoina, since she's entitled to it, Memata, it should be taken into consideration. Oidomo perhaps, Kivin Dila Mintzaba, there's a possibility that this Almana will get married at any time. And when she gets married, obviously, Lesla, she's no longer supported from that estate. And since that possibility exists at any given moment, Hashtanami Lesla, her number should not be taken in, that number should not be taken into consideration. Continues the Gemara. And im tim tzuloyma, kiven de ila mincha b'leslo, since if she gets married, she has the ability and the possibility of getting married at any moment, therefore, it doesn't affect this determination, and that's why hashta nami leslo, bas ishtamahu. What would be the halacha? The Gemara many times discusses that if a woman gets married to a man, she was previously married, she had a daughter. So she writes into the ksuba that my daughter, who's not related to this husband, his stepdaughter, will get supported for 5 years. And what's the din, asked the Gemara, if there's such a stepdaughter situation, and this father dies, and the ksuba says that he has to support this girl. The question is the support for this girl included in making the calculation for Nechasim Rubim and Nechasim Atam? Bas Ishtoi, Masha Tamat Menechasim. Miriam Kivin Dechim Mintzaba, Nami Isla. This girl is entitled to the years of support, and that obligation remains even if she gets married, unlike the Almana, where the obligation ceases if she gets married. So do we say, since the girl has a much stronger hold here, because she's going to get supported even if she gets married, therefore certainly we take that into consideration. Since if this girl dies within this time frame, then the ksuba doesn't obligate the estate to continue paying her estate, and therefore, it shouldn't be taken into consideration for Nechasim Ruv and Nechasim Atam. Masha makes an interesting observation. He says, if we're going to paskin the Loi Mamata, that we don't take the Almana obligation into consideration, and we don't take the daughter, Bas Ishtai, number into consideration, he says there's a very big nafkamina still. He says, let's say we don't take into consideration. He says, but we still have to support the Almana. We still have to support the Bas Ishtai. So he says, according to the Rashbam, the Almana would only be supported from the sons. The Bas Ishtai, however, would be supported both from the sons and the daughters. Because he wants to suggest that the obligation to support the Almana is an obligation of a choiv. And a choiv is on the sons. On the other hand, the obligation of the Bas Ishtai is not a chayiv, and therefore that obligation would fall both on the sons and the daughters. Continues the Gemara. Vim tim tzloima, kiven de ilam mesa lesla, since there's always a possibility that this estate will not have to support the Bas Ishtai. Why? Because she may pass away, and therefore v'lo memata, what's going to be the din b'al chayiv? That the father left obligation, he left the debt. And the Gemara's question is, but before we make the determination if this Nechasim Rubim and Nechasim Atim, should we first take off that number from the top that the estate has to pay the person that the father owed money? The obligation doesn't change if the Bal Chayiv remains alive or not. The father owed this person money, and if he dies, you have to pay that Bal Chayiv's Yarshim. Oidoma, maybe the Bal Chayiv will never come ask for his money. And therefore, even though the obligation remains if the Bal Chayiv is alive or dead, it still should maybe not have an effect on determining if this is Nechasim Rubim or Nechasim Atim. Says the Gemara, and as Rishonim explained, the questions that the Gemara now is going to ask are really the exact same questions that we already learned. And it's very easy, therefore, to ask to learn this next piece of Gemara. The only nafkamina between this approach and the previous approach is the order, is the succession of the questions. And the Gemara turns around the order in which it asks the questions. So what's the nafkamina? If you ask this question first, or you ask that question first, there's a very big nafkamina. Because we know, we've quoted the Rambam, it's not only the opinion of the Rambam, many Rishonim follow this opinion, that wherever the Gemara asks a series of questions, and there's an Imtim Tzolaymer, we always pass him like the Imtim Tzolaymer. And therefore, here the Imtim Tzolaymers were saying, the first question was, does the Ramana change the calculation? Does it have an effect on the calculation? Imtim Tzolaymer, it doesn't. So that means the halacha is that the Ramana has no effect. Imtim Tzolaymer, then the Gemara's next Imtim Tzolaymer was that the Bas Ishtai doesn't. The only one that the Gemara left standing was the question about Baal Chayiv. Now the Gemara goes in the opposite direction. Baal Chayiv Mashi Ratman Chasim. Will the Baal Chayiv, the fact that there's Baal Chayiv, have an effect on determining if there's Nechasim Rubim Nechasim Atim? Bas Ishtai Mashi Tamad. Ben Nechsei. Ben Nechasim. Amanosoi Mashi Tamad. Ben Nechasim. So here we're going to say is as follows. The Gemara first asked the Baal Chayiv, does it affect? Imtim Tzolaymer does. So now we're paskening that the Baal Chayiv has clearly an effect. What will be the din by Bas Ishtai? And Imtim Tzolaymer that the Bas Ishtai does. What will be the din by Almana? And Imtim Tzolaymer that the Almana does. Now the Gemara asks, Amanaso Yabas. If somebody passed away and he left over very meager assets and there isn't enough to support the Almana and the daughter, Ezmen Kaidemis. And the Rishash, beautiful according to the way we're learning the Gemara, explains the Gemara as follows. He says, he starts with a fundamental question. Dar Zeruah actually discusses this also. They start with a very fundamental question. In this version of the Gemara is asking a new shaila that we didn't have in the first version. And that was the shaila that we just asked. Amanoso Yabas, Ezman Kodemus. So they ask, why does the Gemara only ask this question according to this version? Not according to the previous version. So he says very gishmak according to what we just said. According to the previous version, we passed like an Imtim Tzolaymer. And the Imtim Tzolaymer was that the Almana is not mamat. So the Almana is not counted. But now the Imtim Tzolaymer says just the opposite. That the Almana is mamat. So now that we passed that the Almana does have an effect, so now we want to know afterwards, so now that the Almana is counted, who has Kadima in these estate, Dalmona Bas? Amalei. So he said, in answer to this question, Zilla, Idna V'Talamacha, go away and come back tomorrow. Kiyasa, Amalei, Pishayt Miyaskadam. I can answer one question. Damar Avu, Amar Asi, Osa Amona Itzlabas. Chazal treat the relationship between Amona and the daughters, Kabas Itzlachim, the way Chazal treated the relationship between the daughters and the brothers, Nechasim Ma'atim, with a father left over only Nechasim Ma'atim. Ma'abas Eitzlachim. As we learned in the Mishnah, the relationship between the daughter and her brothers, if there's meager assets, Da'aloch is Abbas Nezoinis, V'anach Achim Yishalah Psachim, it's the daughters who get supported, and the brothers should take Tztaka. Af Amona Eitzlabas, similarly, Amona Nezoinis, Da'amona will get supported, Abbas Tishla Psachim, and it's the daughter that should go collect tzedakah, because that is less bizoyin, less of an embarrassment to the deceased father, husband. So the Mishnah said, Adman Aymer, Bishvil Shani Zocha of Sarati, because I'm a boy, do I lose out? Says Rambai, what my comment, what's Adman saying? Amar Bai, Hach Kama, Bishvil Shani Zocha, Veroya Nilas B'Torah, because I'm a man, and I have the Chiv, and the obligation and the opportunity to learn Torah of Sarati, should I lose out? Amalei Rava, ask Rava, I don't understand. What does learning Torah have to do with this? El Mata, what does learning Torah have to do with Yerusha? El Mata, Manda Osik B'Torah, who do yours? Only a son who learns Torah will Yashin his father. The Lo Yosik B'Torah, Lo Yaris? What does Torah have to do with it? And as Tosfos points out, that even though when somebody is doing a mitzvah, when it comes to giving tzedakah, there is certainly a concept of giving tzedakah to loim dei Torah, to those that learn Torah, before we give tzedakah to those that aren't learning Torah. But that has nothing to do with what we're discussing in our Mishnah and our Gemara. Our Gemara is talking Hilchos Yerusha, and learning Torah has nothing to do with Hilchos Yerusha. Elo, Amar Rav Hachkam. This is the way to understand. Elo, Amar Rav Hachkam. This is the way to understand Adam's statement. If I'm a man, and I'm right to be a Yorish Midaraisa, the proof in the pudding is that Menachos Merubim, he gets, they get the entire estate. So why Menachos Matim? They're Yashim Daraisa. Yashim Daraisa should put them into a stronger position, not into a weaker position. A beautiful Chassidus Shavart on Admon's statement. The Shamri Munim says this fart. He says, sometimes people think because they're doing what Hashem says, and they follow the mitzvahs of Hashem, it caused them loss. If they wouldn't be bound to Torah mitzvahs, they would have it much easier, they could make more money, they could have an easier life. So he says, a person should never say, B'shvil shani zocher, because I remember zocher Hashem, plays on the word zocher, because a person should never say, B'shvil shani zocher, because I remember Hashem, hefsadati I lost. Following Hashem's ways is always the right way, and never chas v'shalom causes a loss. Says the Mishnah, Hiniach banim abanayis v'tumtum. Somebody left over yarshim, sons, daughters, and a tumtum. A tumtum we know is a person who is area where you could tell if he's a man or a woman is covered, and we don't know if he's a man or a woman. Says the Mishnah, and we'll discuss this more at length in tomorrow's shir. B'shvan the nechas merubim. If there's nechas merubim, has a charm daichanai sa'etzel nekaivis. If there's nechas merubim, so as we learned in the previous Gemara, then the sons are in better position than the girls. So the sons say, we'll treat you like a girl. Nechas mo'atim, if there's only nechas mo'atim, and the kevus daichanai sa'etzel zacharim. So there, it's better off to be a woman on the keva over a zachar, so the keva send them to the zacharim. Why? Because he's a safek. Next case. Ha'imer, if somebody says the following statement, Taylor ishti zacher, and Taylor ishti zacher, if my wife will have a boy, yitl mana, he should get a mana. Yitl zacher, if she indeed has a zacher, yitl mana, he gets the mana. If he says, im nekeva, and my wife has a girl, masayim, then she should get 200, filled in the nekeva, okay, that tells masayim. If she has nekeva, she gets masayim. If he says, im zocha mana, im nekeva masayim, v'yolda zocha v'nekeva, and she has either a boy or a girl, zocha naitl mana, nekeva then tells masayim. And the Rashbam says, don't understand pshat in the Mishnah, very big machlokes, don't understand pshat in the Mishnah that she had twins, because according to the Rashbam, if there will be twins, they'll get nothing. Because the father, we could successfully argue, this is the Rashbam Pshat, we could successfully argue that the father said, only if I had one boy or one girl, then I'll really be besimcha. I had a son, I had a daughter, and I want to give them this gift. But twins is not such a big simcha. It's a big responsibility to have to raise twins. Or I may not have enough money to give away gifts if I have two children at the same time. And therefore, according to the Rashbam, pshat is, as I said, that if he had a boy, he gets a mana. If he has a girl, she gets masayim. If they have twins, the Mishnah is teaching us, they get nothing. The Rambam and other Rishonim disagree. And they say that what the Mishnah is teaching us is that his statement is to be understood. If I have a boy, he should get 100. If I have a girl, she should get 200. And if I have twins, the boy should get 100 and the girl should get 200. Yol the tumtum, if she has a tumtum, is the halacha ein a noitel. She's not entitled to take anything. So tumtum is not a boy or a girl. As we'll see in tomorrow's shir, our Mishnah represents the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, that a tumtum is considered a bar yibah b'fnei atzmai. He's not a boy or a girl. However, do say to Rishonim, that let's say, as I said earlier, the tumtum's area is ultimately exposed, and now we know either he's a boy or a girl, then I'll get what a boy or a girl gets, even though it means that so many years later, that we didn't know when he was born what he is. It'll only take after that operation is done. That doesn't change the din. When we'll know, he'll get it. Im Omar, however, if he said, Kom Masha Taylor Ishti Yitoil, he says, whatever child my woman wife has, whatever the gender is, kareza yita. Then the halacha is that even if there's a tumtum, they should get. And the Mefarshim say, obvious. The Rishonim ask, what's the chiddush of the Mishnah? If he didn't identify a boy or a girl, of course, even if he has an tumtum or even an androgynous, they should take. Why shouldn't they take? So Rishonim explain that since having a tumtum and androgynous, chas v'shalom, is so unlikely, maybe we should be able to argue that he shouldn't get anything. Because that wasn't something that the father ever expected to happen. Teaches us the Mishnah. If you didn't articulate in your statement that you mean only a boy or a girl, so even if there's a tumtum, he gets. V'mein shem yerish elahu. If there's only child left from a couple is a tumtum, so then, even though we don't know if he's a boy or a girl, or as I just said, maybe a berry with ne'atzmai, he's yerish esakal. And the Rishayim give two reasons why he's yerish esakal. One pshat the Rishayim say is because the pasuk, we've quoted this pasuk many times, the pasuk by the parish of Yibam, where the pasuk says, Ein loy, and the Gemara many times we've learned says, I not love, look if there are any descendants here. And if there's a descendant, he's the Yairish. That's one pshat the Rishayim give. Another pshat the Rishayim give is, yes, he's Nebuchatumtum, but he's the closest Yairish. And since he's the closest Yairish, therefore, he deserves to get the Yerusha. He's the closest relative. Says Rabbi Chanan, what's the nafgamina between these two pshatim? Chanan says, a gevaldige nafgamina. He says, if somebody dies, and the only child that he had was a tumtum, will his wife be obligated to have Yibim Chalitza? If we learn it from the pasuk, Ein loy ayin alav, which is the parish of Chalitza, so then his wife won't have to have parish of Yibim, his wife won't have to have Yibim. If, however, ever we learn from the concept that this is the closest relative, but not from the pasuk by parish of Yibim, it could be he'll be the Yairish, but the wife of his father will still be obligated to have Yibim Uchalitza. Interesting machloikus Rishayim. We know, we've learned this, we just finished learning parish of Yishnoichlam, hopefully we still remember it. The Gemara taught us that in a situation where there are sons and daughters, the sons yarish and not the daughters. Well, we know halacha, if somebody left over a daughter and a tumtum, how do we look at the Hilchos Yerusha? Machlokes Rishonim. Some Rishonim say, because if the tumtum is a boy, he deserves all of the Yerusha. If he's a girl, he doesn't. So how do we look at it? So some Rishonim say, if somebody leaves over a nekeva and a tumtum, the Yerusha is divided 50-50. Other Rishonim say no, that it's divided 75% to the tumtum and 25% to the nekeva. To the nekeva. Why? They explain it's very similar to the situation of Shnaim Oichs Metalis, Mishnah we learned from Masechta Bamitzia, where the Mishnah spoke about a case where one person's holding half the talis, and everybody agrees that that half is his. And the other half they're arguing over. So the Mishnah paskins, the one will get 75% and the other one will get 25%. Here too. The tumtum is certainly entitled to 50%, because the worst he could be is in the kaiva. And so he's another daughter, so he gets 50%. So now the argument is he a zacher? Is he entitled to 100%? Or is he not? So we have a fight over the second 50%, and that's why he should get 75%, and they get 25%. The Mefarshim ask, why is this statement that if somebody makes, if I have a son, he'll get this much. If I have a daughter, he'll get this much, not considered an asmachta. And we've learned asmachta loikanya. So the parish can say, what is the case of an asmachta? The case of an asmachta is a situation where I enter into a bet where I don't necessarily don't expect to have to pay. Here, he expects to pay. He just doesn't know what he's going to have to pay. He's certainly obligating himself. And that's why the parish can say, for example, let's say you put in a bid. There's something that's up for bidding, and you put in a bid. You don't know if you're going to get that bid, because you have competitors. It's still not considered an asmachta, because you want to get it. It's not that you don't want to get it. When I play cards, I don't want to lose the money. Here, I want to make the money. And that's why it's not considered an asmachta.